What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome on into the Lineup Logic Podcast, daily fantasy podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I'm your host, Sean Kane, bringing you a Wednesday slate breakdown for NBA. We have done a number of NFL breakdowns today. We had the Thanksgiving Spectacular, where we broke down that three-game slate. We had the weekend show. So the main slate show is up on blogtalk.com, blogtalkradio.com/lineuplogic. And now we got the NBA breakdown. I'm trying to get all this stuff ready for you guys so that while you travel and you sit in traffic tomorrow, you sit at the airport, you have podcasts to listen to, something to waste the time and enjoy over the break. So let's go ahead and take a look at what Vegas has to tell us about this Wednesday NBA slate. All right, so like I said, a full slate of games here upcoming on Wednesday. And it all starts on the East Coast with Washington and Charlotte divisional matchup, 210 total here. Charlotte favored by 2.5, which is a pretty, you know, standard line here. Good starting point. Just basically home court advantage for the Hornets in this one. Should be a pretty tightly contested game. Washington nor Charlotte hasn't really blown any opponents out inside the Eastern Conference. As far as injury news goes here, you know, we saw John Wall dealing with something, you know, dealing with that shoulder injury earlier in the week, but he was back in that Milwaukee game and they rolled. They've been playing much, much better defense, and that's real difference for the Wizards in this situation. Their defense has just been absolutely excellent in the last couple games. So tough game to really like here, especially with Charlotte also being a very, very low upside team for fantasy scoring against. But I think you can attack the backcourts if you want to attack anybody in this situation. So let's move on to a much more juicy game. I think you have to look at Brooklyn and Cleveland as one of the best games of the night. 228 total here in Cleveland. They are favored by 11. Makes total sense to be double-digit favorites at home after that drubbing that they handed to the Pistons. After everyone forgot that this offense is absolutely elite. Of course, we're still missing Amon Shumpert and Derrick Rose, which means that we're going to see some extra minutes for Jose Calderon in the point guard position. And he was very effective with those minutes the other day. On the Brooklyn side of the ball, we're taking a look at the Trevor Booker injury. That's a big deal. Trevor Booker possibly out with an ankle. We'll see if that is the case, and you're going to open up some front court minutes for a guy like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson to have to do a lot more work at the center position. So interesting spot, no doubt about it. Should be a great game for LeBron and a couple of the other stud usage guys on both sides of the team, including Spencer Dinwiddie and Damari Carroll. Portland at Philadelphia, this one a no line in it. I think we're waiting on Damian Lillard ankle news. He was day-to-day. He left that game for a little while after an ankle injury in that Memphis game. Otherwise, this should be a pretty decent total, although Portland's defense has been phenomenal. And, you know, Philadelphia not so much, but their offense has been unbelievably efficient. So you kind of have a battle of, you know, two teams that are doing opposite things extremely, extremely well. So we'll keep an eye on the Damian Lillard news. I think he's going to play. He's probable he returned to that game. He's going to have some swelling. How much is that going to hurt his effectiveness? I'm not really sure. I wasn't really completely interested in rostering him as much as I was in CJ McCollum. On the 76ers side of this, you know, none of the no injuries that we, you know, didn't know were already there. So we certainly have a couple spots. We have no value opening up on the 76ers side. Of course, we have the spots that we know we can go to on the 76ers, the Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. And you worry about them against a really efficient defense that protects the paint really well. I think it's a good spot to kind of stay away from the 76ers, maybe at these elevated prices, and hope that they, kind of a slow slugging matchup with Portland maybe drops some of their pricing. The Clippers versus Atlanta, 210 total here. The Clippers are only favored by 3. God, I mean, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. The Los Angeles Clippers have multiple All-Stars on their, you know, not All-Stars, but previous All-Stars. And they're only favored by 3 against one of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference in Atlanta. It really just tells you this team is struggling. They just lost by 20 points to the Knicks, and you know, and Kristaps didn't really even have to do much. So definitely not a great situation for the Clippers. They're struggling massively, but still road favorites here in this spot. As far as injuries, we have the return of Patrick Beverley. He got 27 minutes and basically ruined all the value that you had in that backcourt. No one getting 30 minutes in the backcourt for the Clippers anymore. Of course, you know, we know how good Doc Rivers is at his rotations. Gallinari's still out, which is giving Wesley Johnson a lot of good run. Gallinari's going to be out for a while, so we're going to see what this rotation at the three looks like. Of course, if it was me, I would probably play Lou Williams on possibly with the ability to, you know, you don't have a lot of defensive upside, but in a certain situations when you can run even more scoring upside out there and just let DeAndre protect the rim behind Lou in that situation, because he's just such a good scorer. But, you know, what do I know? I think there's some interest in Wesley Johnson because you do attack Atlanta on the wings, no doubt about it. On the Atlanta side, you know, you got to pay attention to the Luke Babbitt and Mike Muscala injuries. If Luke Babbitt is not playing, I mean, it's going to be John Collins. It's going to be only John Collins at the four here. Muscala is still out, and, you know, Luke Babbitt is going to be, if he's out, then John Collins has to get at least 30 minutes. You know, he has to. And this team has struggled against the center. And he's not necessarily a traditional, you know, center, but he is a big, and he should be able to take advantage of scoring inside the paint. So that's the injury situation we're keeping our eye on there. Toronto at New York, 212 total here. Toronto favored by 4. They have been playing just phenomenally well. The Raptors really clicking on all cylinders right now. You know, dropped one to the Wizards the other day, but this should be a good bounce back for them. They handed New York a pretty serious loss while they were at home last week. They're getting them again in the Garden this time, and still 4-point road favorites. Good pricing on these guys. We're going to keep our eye on the Norman Powell news. He has been out still. Should CJ Miles be the guy there that you could go to? I mean, yeah, you can go to CJ Miles. His price is up. He just doesn't really do much except for shoot the three. Not a bad team to shoot the three against, though, because they do pack the paint to try to, you know, attack that. You know, that's what their defensive identity is to not really allow the rebound, and they will allow, you know, exterior shooting, whereas they're not going to allow the second chance points there by attacking the glass. As far as other injuries for the Raptors, nothing else that we're concerned with. And on the Knicks, you know, French Frank was sick. He is probable for Wednesday, so not necessarily interested in playing him against Kyle Lowry. I am interested in playing Kyle Lowry against him. However, he smashed for 40 points last time against this team, and should be in line to, you know, continue to rack up the peripherals, which you love. I mean, you know, Lowry's been doing like 8 and 10 every single game in a rebounds and assists column. He's just been stuffing his stat sheet. So you really, if you get the scoring upside from him, you add to your floor in a serious way, which is kind of fun. Going into the Midwest here, Dallas at Memphis, 197 total here. Memphis favored by 5. I mean, this is, you like this spot for Marc Gasol, but he is priced up. As is Mario Chalmers. But I do think that you could possibly go to some contrarian plays here, a low total like this. You know, two teams that are slow in pace, people are going to probably avoid this game. And I think that if you go here, you want to try to stack it up, get some opposing pieces, maybe a Dennis Smith. And, you know, this is a GPP idea, but maybe a Dennis Smith and a Marc Gasol on opposite sides here, attacking kind of the opposite weaknesses of each team. Although I will say Tyreke Evans in an interesting spot, and he burned people, you know, kind of predictably in his last couple games. But he is in an interesting spot against Memphis on the wing. I will say that it probably is the case that Harrison Barnes will guard him, just because he's been getting their best defender, which is why he struggled against Houston, because Trevor Ariza, I talked about this, Trevor Ariza really shut him down. So an interesting matchup, but a contrarian place to go. I mean, only 197 total. When you have 228 in Cleveland, it's kind of hard to get interested in a 197 total. You know, that's the same as Boston and Miami. I skipped this game, but Boston and Miami, 196 total here in Miami. You know, two good defensive teams. We saw Kyrie go off in this one or his last game for 47. And I talked about him against that Dallas matchup. This is definitely a good spot to go to you know, teams against Dallas, which is just a poor defensive team. And they were able to stay in the game. And as such, Kyrie had to go out and do a ton of scoring. You know, will that happen against Miami here? You got to think it's a competitive game, no doubt about it. Miami has kept things competitive in all of their games, but they don't allow for a lot of upside. They're a pretty slow team, as well as a pretty effective defensive team. They are within the top half of the league in defensive efficiency, right there at 14th in the league in defensive efficiency, only 99 possessions per game. So not exactly a great combination for fantasy production out of Kyrie Irving in this situation, or the rest of the priced up Celtics. Moving on, we have San Antonio at New Orleans, 208 total here. New Orleans favored by two. That says a lot about what Vegas thinks about Boogie and the Brow against the San Antonio front court, which is interesting. I mean, I kind of can't doubt them. I mean, LaMarcus and Pau Gasol are not a good matchup. This is a terrible matchup for San Antonio. They simply don't have the bodies right now to throw at these guys. You know, they are really good in the front court as far as just defending all the forward positions, not allowing a lot of production. They should be able to score on the opposite end against San Antonio pretty easily on the wings. Against New Orleans on the wing. Of course, San Antonio, though, only allowing 57 points to the front court, which is fourth best in the league. Just as good as Utah or Memphis or any of those other teams. Portland, very, very solid in the front court this year. So, you know, not exactly a smash spot. We'll talk about it on the show. Josh and I talk about our thoughts on the Spurs and how you deal with this. How do you attack the Spurs? Because they give up points. I mean, they do give up points, but what do you do? Where do you go in order to get after the Spurs? No serious injuries in this one. You know, nothing that has changed the way that we're approaching any of this team. But moving on, we have the, like I said, guys, this is a huge slate. Orlando at Minnesota, 215 total here. Minnesota favored by 7 at home. They've been playing very well recently, you know, but did just drop two in a row to the Pistons and the Hornets. So not everything is perfect, but they're coming back home against a team in Orlando that is struggling probably even more than they are, giving up, you know, 97 million fantasy points to Victor Oladipo, which, you know, congratulations if you had him. I did not. Great. Good for me. Okay. Moving on. That's where you want to attack this Orlando team on the wings. Interesting spot for Jimmy. Interesting spot for Andrew Wiggins. I'm not really an Andrew Wiggins guy. I can't roster him when you have that much scoring dependence. It really, really, really scares me. Could you go to Cat against Vooch? Yeah. I mean, don't message me if Cat goes off for 55 or 60 in this situation against Vooch. It's because he's going to be able to pull Vooch out onto the perimeter. And Vooch just really, I mean, he's fine, you know, but you need smash matchups for Vooch or else he just gets exposed. Moving on, Denver at Houston, you know, the no Paul Millsap Nuggets will really be tested here. Really be tested, especially because I think now without Millsap, they are going to start to play a lot worse defense. This is the same team as the spring of last year, just more scoring in Jamal Murray in the backcourt, just more scoring out of their backcourt. But they're going to have to run the exact same system that they ran last time. They're going to run a lot of pace up. They're going to try to get easy buckets, and they are going to turn into the same team we saw in the late season Denver, where they were super, super efficient on the offensive end, scoring a ton of points. But that's what Malone is going to have to go to because he doesn't necessarily have a backline defender like Millsap who can just kind of hold everything together. And that was his role. You know, he was good enough to cover everything up And that was kind of what they were, that they were given an above average defense. You have well above average offense and a well above average, or excuse me, an above average defense was a good combination for Denver. Now he's going to be out for 3 months. So we're going to play roulette with this front court. Obviously, Kenneth Faried very much in play. We haven't seen a total here yet. I think, you know, they're still waiting to try and decipher how they should gauge this game without Paul Millsap in there. Dallas at Memphis, talked about that. Chicago at Utah, 196 total here. Utah favored by 8. Chicago coming off the back-to-back here. They're playing against L.A., obviously, tonight. I'm not watching because I'm talking to you guys. But Utah favored by 8 at home after a long road trip. Utah gets to come home, settle down, hopefully try to figure out what life without Rudy Gobert continues to look like for their front court. Chicago, very interesting. They're hard to figure out what their weakness is. They're not a good team defense, but there's not a lot of real serious holes in them. But they are slipping down now to 25th in overall defensive efficiency. Now, the problem is you don't really know. Is it a backcourt issue? Is it a frontcourt issue? Is it in the paint? They haven't really let on to what their you know, point guards have definitely gotten to them. We can't really start Rubio here, right? We know that Derek Favors doesn't necessarily have a perfect matchup with Robin Lopez. There's some size in the front court in Bobby Portis and Robin Lopez. Okay. Do we attack them on the wings at the two? Well, no, not really. I mean, DVP is telling us that they're top 10, actually, against the two. Is it against the three? Not so much. I mean, they're average at best, you know, and we don't really have a three that we trust in Orlando, or excuse me, in Utah right now. So it's kind of a strange matchup for fantasy purposes, not exactly too obvious. And I'm definitely not going to play any Bulls against Utah at home after they've gotten some rest. They've gotten their feet back under them. It just doesn't interest me. So this game is kind of a stay away for me. Milwaukee at Phoenix, that's the opposite of a stay away. This is what we call, just one of the best games of the slate. No doubt about it. 221 total here. Milwaukee favored by 5. Giannis in play. We have the Eric Bledsoe revenge game, Greg Monroe revenge game. I mean, it's just, I mean, give me a break. This is a great spot. You got to get involved here. High pace differential for Milwaukee, who's normally a very slow paced team that won't allow, you know, that doesn't allow fast break points. Phoenix allows a ton of fast break points. It's a really good smash spot for Giannis. You're going to hear about Giannis all across the industry tomorrow. Lakers at Sacramento, 229 total. Lakers favored by 1. Jeez Louise. I mean, this is okay. No, I'm sorry. Not 229. 209. 209 total. I misread that. 209. I was like, 229. Good gracious. Sacramento only runs 98 possessions per game. And that's the truth. They've been actually relatively effective on the defensive end because they don't really play that many possessions. Sacramento is a really, really pretty slow team. 97 possessions per game. Only slower team is the San Antonio Spurs. And when you and the Memphis Grizzlies, those are right there, 1, 2, and 3. It's the slowest teams in the NBA. When you don't play that many possessions, I guess what you're saying is you limit the amount of offense that you have to do. But they also have a bad defense, 109 in defensive rating, the second worst defense in the league. So you certainly could be interested in some Lakers in your lineups tomorrow night. And of course, when you're attacking Sacramento, you really kind of want to do it. You kind of want to do it on the wings, on the peripherals here, and in the front court. You want to be able to get some of those forwards who are capable of getting those easy buckets near the rim because they do allow scoring in the paint, even though they have a couple bigs that they have committed to. But that is it, guys. That is it. That's a lot of games here. I mean, a lot to break down, a lot to talk about. I got Josh Fernandez on to help me out breaking down this Wednesday slate. So let's go ahead and jump into the player breakdown. All right, we are ready to jump on into the week 12 player breakdown. Fern, this is the third podcast I did today. This is
yeah, dude, you're grinding them out.
I'm grinding them out.
Live stream, and what'd you do? What else? You did the lineup logic.
I did the week 12 NFL podcast, but then I did a Thanksgiving short spectacular, the Thanksgiving spectacular, and then we did the crowdcast this afternoon for the patrons. For the evening. It's bananas,
now,
dude.
And now this, man, 10 o'clock at night.
I know, grinding out some NBA. Hey, listen.
We had to fill up our waters.
I know. I had to fill up my water. And by water, I mean
beer, but in this case,
I have water and I have beer.
That's right. That's the podcast.
What are you drinking?
The unfiltered offering, the UFO White Ale from Higher Harpoon, a classic.
Ah, I like that. That's good stuff. I'm drinking a DC Brow India Pale Ale.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's brewed and canned in DC.
Nice. That's why we're getting this in, man, because we got, you know, vacation coming up. I'm traveling tomorrow. I know you're getting the half day, and I know people are going to be busy and not have a ton of time to, you know, just sit and listen to podcasts. So we're going to try and get this stuff done for you guys early in the week, and then you can enjoy the slates as they come on, you know, Wednesday and Thursday and on. So let's go ahead and jump into this player breakdown for NBA Wednesday. We got a massive slate. We were just talking about this. This is, you know, one of the first really, really big, big ones that we have seen in a while, but it is, there's a lot to take in. I mean, all the studs, some marquee matchups, some great primetime games. If you're going to do anything tomorrow night, go watch Golden State, Oklahoma City. That'll be fun. And Portland, Philadelphia should be good too. So a lot of good basketball to be watching, but let's jump into this top of the slate here. We're going to talk studs first here, Fern. And, you know, I'll go back to that Golden State, Oklahoma City game because two of your highest priced point guards on this slate, Russell Westbrook at 10K flat and Steph Curry at 9.5. I don't mind John Wall at 9.6. I think that you don't have the total there that makes you as interested. You don't have the pace necessarily that you would have in this Golden State, Oklahoma City game. You got to look at Russ. You got to look at Steph in this situation. I kind of did a little bit of comparison shopping here. The thing about it is, you know, aside, the total is massive. It's going to be a very competitive game. You're going to see over 35 minutes for starters, that kind of thing. I think Oklahoma City needs this game a lot more than Golden State does. And I have a feeling that Oklahoma City could get drubbed unless the three is going in for Paul George and Carmelo. But here's the deal. Top five in DVP, both teams top five in defensive efficiency. Russ has triple-doubled here. He scored 47 in this matchup once. He has lost every single time. In the last year, he lost every single time, four of them. Steph won every single one of these games. He never scored less than 21. He had multiple rebounds, assists, and steals in all of those games. I think if you're trying to if you're looking for floor, obviously Russ, you know, has a really clear floor, at least 40 points, 45 plus, I think, in a situation when he is going to be in a pace-up game that requires him to play 35 minutes. But if I'm kind of pick somebody, I might pick the way Steph Curry is shooting right now. He's kind of like atomic Steph. I mean, now Brooklyn and Philadelphia aren't exactly great perimeter defenses, but I don't know. For some reason, Steph stands out to me. If you had to pick between these two games, Josh, what are your thoughts here? Or between these two players?
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Yeah. I mean, you said it. I mean, like the way that Steph is playing right now, it's really hard to, I don't want to say fade him, but like it's hard for me to pick Russ over Steph just for the simple fact that, you know, outside of what was it last night? I think it was last night. Mm-hmm. Yeah, last night where Russ just went, you know, nuclear on New Orleans. Like you just look at the game logs and it's just a lot of scores hovering around 40.
Right.
And I just, you know, other than like a Chicago 50 plus outing, the Indiana game back, you know, at the beginning of the season where he put up 66. I mean, it's just been a lot of like 40, 40, 40, 40, 40. And Steph, I think, has just a hair more upside. And so all things being equal, I just got to go with Steph with the comfort knowing that I think he's more likely to get you 50 than Russ is at this point in time.
Yeah. The way he's shooting right now, man, he, you know, and we know he's good in Oracle. I think the other thing is you look at Russ, everybody goes, well, he just put up that 60 pointer. He had 16 rebounds in that New Orleans game. He has not been rebounding at that rate. just to be clear, like that's not a thing. He has not been doing that. So I think you have an outlier performance kind of buoying the way you feel about Russ right now. And you're right, it's 40s. And I think Steph just, you know, the price there, you're asking him to get over 45 in a super competitive matchup. That's kind of in his range of outcomes. So maybe you have a little bit, I don't know. We know that
Steph, I just think that that was like a just a psychotic Russ crazy game. I mean, New Orleans DVP wise against the the point guard position is pretty damn good.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think that he probably induced some switches onto Rondo, and part of the reason that he was getting those rebounds is to not pick up Holiday in the half court, who is a much tougher defender. But you know, you don't want to overthink it too much. So let's move on. Shooting guard, this might be one of the best plays on the board, no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah. James Harden against Denver. I mean, what else is there to say about this guy? Like, I think I've said that phrase like 11 billion times on this show. I mean,
it's a nice warm up.
James Harden.
Get the gears moving, thinking what you're going to say.
We got to hire some like person on Fiverr or whatever to like go through all the shows and find all the times where I've said James Harden. What else is there to say about this guy?
it's a great throwaway line. You should keep it in the repertoire.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, no, Harden. I mean, against Denver, especially. I mean, first and foremost, I want to say, like, I think there's a lot of concern that people have with him coexisting with CP3. And I look at this the same way I look at Davis and Boogie in the Brow. You know, those two coexist just fine. Any given night, both can get you 50 plus. Each of them can get you 50 plus. And there's been nights where both have gotten you 60 plus or 50 and 60 or 60 and 50 or whatever. Like, they can coexist. And I think Harden and Chris Paul can coexist on that team without a doubt. And there's evidence with that. I know that CP3 is not playing his full allotment of minutes yet, but Harden just put up 65 and 52 in his last two games with Paul in the lineup. And the last three games against Denver, 62. 69, 65 FanDuel points. One was a triple-double. Two were double-doubles. He actually missed triple-doubles in those games by three rebounds in each of them, I believe it is. 10 total steals plus blocks. Averages 36 real points. He's really good against Denver. And Denver is giving up 1.94 fantasy points per possession, which is tied with the Clippers for worst in the league. I just think that this is a smash spot for Harden. I think that if you get him in there and you find another stud who's in a similar situation where he can get you 60 to 70 points, you can find a lot of options down low that we'll talk about later in the show to make it work and maybe even get yourself another solid mid-range guy. I don't think that this game is going to be super competitive. That's the only concern I have, you know, with Millsap out, there's a little concern there, but you know, we've seen it before. Harden can just go bananas in three quarters.
Yeah.
So I'm not really worried about it.
I think the real thing that I'm interested in here is that, you know, this defense without Millsap is going to struggle. They struggled last year. This is the same personnel basically that they had last year at the end of the year, where they were having to score 120 points a game. They were running this massive pace and they had one of the best offenses in the league, but you always had these, you know, 230, 240 point games with them. This is the same unit. They're running it back. They brought Millsap in to anchor this defense, and now they're going to have to run and gun. I think that Malone, you're going to see him go back to the style that this team ran without Millsap last spring. And I think you're going to start to see them pick up the pace. I think you're going to start to see them try to rely on their good passing more often. And, you know, that's going to be good for Houston. I mean, Houston still has not picked up their pace either. But they're super efficient. I mean, it's insane how efficient they are. So The thing is that everybody is going to look at the small forward position and assume you have to have LeBron versus Brooklyn or Giannis versus Phoenix, which it's almost a cardinal sin not to. Just playing James Harden in that situation is almost like people will just look at you like you're a freaking idiot. Because you have Giannis against one of the fastest paced, worst defensive teams, and LeBron in the same exact situation. Giannis 12-2 on FanDuel, LeBron 12K on FanDuel. Both getting nearly 40 minutes a game, both with 30% usage rates or more. LeBron has been more consistent. There's no doubt about it. He has been more consistent, over 55 FanDuel points in three of his last four, except for that blowout in Detroit. And, you know, speaking on LeBron, if you can do it, I think that it's a very interesting idea. If you can jam in two of these guys, there's really no reason to do it. Now, on a massive slate like this, it's possible, but you have to get all of your punt players right. And that's a really, really hard thing. So I don't really know if it is that viable. You're going to have at least four 3K players in your lineup, probably.
Yeah, I prefer that more for cash in a giant slate than I do for tournaments, because I first of all, I think a lot of people are going to try to do that.
Right.
So people are going to think they're being cute and differentiating themselves, but right, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be doing that. And also, like, they're on a slate this size, there's going to be a lot of grout guys, you know, some of whom hopefully we hit on tonight.
Right.
That are going to get you 50 points at 6,500, 7K. You know what I mean? So
Or get you 40 points at 6K and get you 30 points at 4K. I mean, those are the types of price points that you want to. You're looking at this 4K range of point guards and you're asking yourself, okay, who can get me 30 points based on their minutes, right?
And there will be somebody.
There is. There always
like
is.
There's going to be someone. Every night there's going to be some backup point guard that you and I want to like find out the proverbial skeleton key for, like, when the hell do we pick these guys?
That's what I'm saying here, but I think Bron is, they're not going to blow out teams like they did all with the Pistons. I mean, you have to remember they shot the ball phenomenally. This is the best 3-point shooting team in the NBA. The numbers tell us that they did not miss a three like in the first half whatsoever. So Brooklyn allowing massive production in the backcourt. They lost this game last time. I think that they're going to be very, very easily, you know, ready to bounce back here and win in this spot. And I think LeBron does that with 50 plus points. Now, is there a possibility of a blowout? Yes. They seem to have found something. They feel comfortable in themselves that if you get a blowout, you're screwed. And on the Giannis side, he's been struggling. That's the problem here. You have the most expensive player on the slate struggling right now because teams are learning how to defend him. I mean, they're basically saying, okay, this is what you have to do. You can't let him in the paint, nothing free. You foul him when you have to. He's scoring a lower percentage in his last couple games, and it's kind of a rough. I mean, he was on that hot streak right before that kind of second week of the season where it was basically he couldn't miss 60 points. He was scoring as much as 30% of his points in fast break, in transition, on a regular basis. And I think teams now know that you are going to lose to Giannis if you give him fast break points, and they are making a point of limiting that. He hasn't been getting those easy buckets lately. Teams are figuring that out. The good news is that the Suns just don't know how to do that. They allow some of the fast break points in the league, and one of the highest fast break efficiency rates in the league. So Giannis should be able to get those 8 to 10 extra points free in the open court. And I think Eric Bledsoe, we're going to talk about Eric Bledsoe. Eric Bledsoe is going to have no problem wanting to run the court with Giannis in this situation and just absolutely destroy this team. So if you had to pick, though, Fern, which one are you going with?
God, man. When I picture Giannis against Phoenix, I just think of like a grown man against a bunch of children, you know?
The Monstars?
Exactly. But then that's but hold on a second. But then that's basically saying that Phoenix has like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and
yeah, not even close.
Yeah, no, no, but yeah, I gotta go with Giannis, man. I mean, I love LeBron against Brooklyn, but there's a chance that production could, you know, filter out to other guys on that team. On Cleveland, you know, and it could take some of that massive upside away from LeBron.
Right.
I don't know. It's hard. It's a really hard call.
Yeah. I think
I'd have to go with Giannis just, you know, from his upside.
Yeah. I think that the blocks upside, the turnovers upside, definitely there for Giannis. I think the thing about Bron in this situation is the reason that Bron benefits is that their defense is so bad that he gets forced into minutes because of that. And Milwaukee makes a really, really concerted effort to slow games down, get back on defense, limit free points, and they can build a really solid lead. Now, I'm not necessarily thinking that they will, but this could be a blowout situation for Giannis and company. But they've struggled in their last couple games. I mean, you know, they lost pretty handily to a bad team in Dallas the other day and to the Washington, back-to-back games here. So they've lost those games. Giannis has struggled in those games. He seems to be key to their success. We'll see. You know, we'll see. I don't really know how to project why they're struggling, except for that I know that teams are figuring out how to deal with Giannis. Moving on, power forward. We'll talk a little bit about Anthony Davis here. What do you think? I mean, he had a nice bounce back. And he's still relatively well priced, but San Antonio is not exactly an ideal interior matchup here.
Yeah, I know that people are scared away from seeing San Antonio on the schedule. But hear me out here. You know, first of all, the last three games against San Antonio, Browse put up 47, 44, and 21. We can exclude that outlier 21-pointer because I think, if my memory serves me correctly, that was a low-minute game where he, like, did his typical once-every-five-games leave to the locker room kind of deal, right. You know. And then 47 and 44 is, like, big deal. Like, I don't really care about that from him. But there is a couple little things that pop to me. There are a couple little things that pop to me. Not is a couple things. I'm learning my grammar still at age 33. 44 point outing, 16 real points, but he finished with 22 rebounds against San Antonio in just 33 minutes. I mean, 22 rebounds in 33 minutes is impressive. Like, that's ridiculous. So we're talking about a game in which he flirted with 20-20 against this team. Keep in mind, we just saw John Collins of your Atlanta Hawks put up 35 FanDuel points. A lot of people are really high on John Collins as a, you know, up-and-coming prospect, young player, you know, getting some nice run with Atlanta. But, like, he's a baby. You know, but he went and put up 35 on San Antonio, which is very impressive. I think the fact of the matter is like with Kawhi out, you know, that is a massively significant loss for that San Antonio team defense. Kawhi played in all four of the games, at least that I can see on Fantasy Labs, in which Davis is credited for on their product. You know, there's obviously more games that he's played against him in his career. But the point is that, like, he can produce decently against them with Kawhi in the game. With Kawhi out of the game, you have to assume that that's going to bolster his production. I just saw Anthony Davis go 44 minutes, put up 57 FanDuel points against OKC, and they're one of the best defensive teams in the NBA. That just really stands out to me. Like, I just think that people are going to get away from this guy you know, they're going to see the matchup. They're going to assume that it's going to be a really bad state of affairs for him. And they're not wrong. You know, I have my skepticism about it. You know, there's right. definitely risk involved. But the thing is like San Antonio gives up 2.83 fantasy points per possession to power forwards. And that is one of the worst in the league. They slow the pace down, but Davis is a very efficient player. So if he can get a lot of possessions and get a nice allotment of minutes and the game stays close, I could see him putting up well over 50 points in this game, just considering all these different variables that come into play with the John Collins thing and no Kawhi in, producing nicely with Kawhi in the game. And just dropping a huge outing, I mean, not huge by his standards, but a really nice 57-point outing against OKC, I like the spot. You know, if I'm running a single lineup, I'm not going to use Anthony Davis. But if I'm running multiple lineups, I'm going to definitely try to get a couple of shares of him in there just for the fact that he should be, you know, owned in single digits on this slate.
Yeah, he's one of the guys on this slate more than anybody who can go out and can score, 60, 70 fantasy points. And the difficulty that I have here is really pace. I think that San Antonio is going to slow this game down enough to a point where you're going to limit Davis's ceiling. You really want him in a situation where the scoring goes back and forth, or he's going to get 40 minutes. You saw him in a game like, for example, a ceiling game like that Indiana game, right? That Indiana game, Indiana is one of the top 10 teams in pace, also bad in defensive efficiency. There was just a massive number of possessions for him and for Boogie. Same with Orlando. OKC, that game, he played 44 minutes because it was basically competitive the entire game, and they knew that if they took them out, they would lose. But in a situation against San Antonio where the pace is a little bit slower, you could see 34 to 37 minutes. My concern is that you get an outcome a little bit more like this Toronto and Atlanta game. You know what I mean, Josh? Like 47 points.
Yeah, no, and I 100% agree with you here.
But you're running the same risk with a guy like Giannis.
Say it again.
You're running the exact same risk with Giannis. The exact same.
Right, yeah, but the opposite is that, like, I think this game will be close. I don't think that San Antonio is going to, like, blow them out or anything. Like, I could see this being a close game, but he's negatively affected by the pace.
Right.
And Giannis is negatively affected by them saying, hey, let's get this guy 30 minutes and call it a night.
Right. Well, their own pace, right? I mean, Giannis's team, the Bucks run a terrible slow pace.
No, yeah, they do. You're right. They're one of the lowest paced teams in the league. So, like, these guys, there's definitely risk involved. Right. And that's kind of why I want to run more of a balanced lineup. For this particular slate, I love Harden, but you know, all of these studs have little, I don't want to say big blemishes, but some little blemishes that you really have to pay attention to when you're building your lineups or your lineup. If you're building a lineup, you need to really pay attention to these blemishes, because a lot of people are just going to, like, default lock these guys in because of their names or whatever. And I mean, you don't want 45 points from Anthony Davis, and that could be a very real possibility.
No, yeah, that's a good point. All right, let's talk about center here. I will say Cat crushed against them. Jokic versus Houston. Obviously, you're going to get the usage bump here without without Millsap. Do you think that this is enough of a good matchup? I mean, this defense has been decent in Houston. What are your thoughts about this matchup here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is a contrarian play. Again, like, I'm looking for some contrarian plays on this big slate. And we've got Boogie. It doesn't matter who he plays as far as I'm concerned. You know, I love Boogie in that matchup. But I don't know if I really want to go there. Embiid, obviously, you know, just put up 90 whatever points. I mean, he's getting full allotment of minutes now. You got to love Embiid, you know, against anybody. And then Cat against Orlando. I mean, that's a beautiful matchup. I'm just trying to be devil's advocate for you fine people and offer to you Nikola Jokic against Houston. I like his situation. I think that he has some nice upside in this game. The last three times Denver's played Houston, he's put up 64, 47, and 28. So the 28-point outing was definitely a dud, but it was an outlier. And, of course, I'm an idiot, and I took away the tab that had that game log listing there. So whatever, I'm not going to sit here and look for it. But that was definitely an outlier. But that 64-point outing, I mean, that really stands out to you. The 47-point outing stands out to you. Let's call it in the middle there and say 55. I mean, I would love to get Jokic at 55 points at 9K. And it's entirely possible that that 55 points, you know, and again, I'm just calling in the middle of his last two outings against Houston, could outscore Boogie, Embiid, and Towns. So, you know, that's just something to consider. It really sucks that Denver lost Millsap. Like, I thought that Denver, I mean, obviously they're not going to be like an NBA Finals contender, but they were definitely, you know, looking like a vastly improved team defensively, at least in their front court, compared to last year. You know, they're still getting burned by guards, but, you know, the fact of the matter is like, losing a guy like him is just going to, like you said, Sean, like it's going to just completely revert them back to their, you know, late 2016-17 season,
right.
You know, mentality. And yeah, that sucks. I feel really bad for Denver fans and for Millsap. He's going to be out for 2 to 3 months, but this can only help Jokic from a fantasy perspective. With Millsap off the court this year, Jokic's usage has gone up almost 2%, which is, you know, it's pretty significant.
Definitely.
And his fantasy labs plus minus has gone up 1.6. So those are really big numbers that you have to pay attention to. He definitely pops when Millsap has been off the court this year. And we've seen what he could do last year when he was just the de facto top dog in that front court. I know that you, Sean, had like the biggest man crush on him ever last season. And I think that this game against Houston, if Denver can keep it close, you know, and their guards, you know, can, you know, put the ball in the basket, you know, and the three-pointers falling and they keep the game close and he gets nice minutes, you know, he could have a crazy sick game. Like I could see another 64-point outing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I mean, I think you're going to see increased pace. You're going to see increased pressure on the offense to produce. You know, we know he's out there for his offense. And at this point, so long as he's healthy, he is going to get more minutes without any severe front court presence, you know, on the offensive end without Millsap relieving a lot of that pressure here. You know, Capella has been good. I mean, that's the one thing you'll say is Capella is kind of coming into his own as a defender, but he's still allowing 22 points per game, 13 rebounds. There's a lot of places in this Denver roster that you can go. Gary Harris is an option. Kenneth Faried is an option with some of the value pieces, you know, with some guys out there. So, a lot of places we can look at, no doubt about it. Let's go ahead into the grout. We're going to move a little bit faster for you guys. We're going to get a couple point guard options. You know, anybody under 8K and below. I don't want to gloss over this, but I'm not going to start with Kyle Lowry. But Kyle Lowry has been really pretty solid, and he's got a phenomenal matchup with New York. He just in at home against the Knicks, 44 points. Spreading it out, you know, doing, you know, plenty of scoring, but obviously adding rebounds, adding assists. He has really been filling the stat sheet, and three games of his last four over over 40 points. He struggled against Washington in that game, but you know, divisional matchup where they have actually decent backcourt defense and a decent defensive efficiency. Not New York. I think Kyle Lowry's in a great spot if you can fit him in. But I'm going to jump down to Spencer Dinwiddie, who's been absolutely phenomenal at 7'6" here versus the Cavs. He is at home. The guy has been just unbelievable since Russell went down. He popped for 49 points. He's over 34 in each of his last three games. He popped for 49 against Utah. And the thing that really showed up there, Josh, was he hit 6 of 10 from behind the arc. I mean, that's kind of thin, but you don't really like going after a guy who's, you know, peak pricing after he hits a bunch of threes. But you know he can take them. You know he'll shoot them. And we know that Cleveland allows a lot of scoring. And he also has a lot of assist upside. 8 in his last two, 11 in the game before that. So he's definitely running the offense effectively. And the primary ball handler there, creating, you know, almost double-digit assists, which is really nice because the Cavs allow double-digit assists. They allow, they're one of, you know, four teams that allow double-digit assists to the point guard position on a regular basis, and 22 points per game. So I think this is a really good spot for Dinwiddie. You know, people continue to question how many, you know, how effective he can be, and he has done some really good scoring. You know, you got to be careful about that. You don't want to chase just pure points. But they're going to need him to score over 20 points. And he's been capable of doing that against, you know, mediocre to bad defenses. You know, and he hasn't faced bad defenses yet. I mean, Golden State and Utah are not bad defenses. They don't play very well when they probably didn't play very well when they played Brooklyn, but those are not bad defenses. And I think if you get a situation where Dinwiddie feels comfortable and defense are letting him do, you're going to see that scoring stay right where it is, above 20 points. He had 38 in this game last time out in 31 minutes. So I like Dinwiddie for the price, but I like your guy just as much. Talk to me about Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah, I love Dinwiddie too. You know, you got to love just picking on the Cavs this year. But dude, Eric Bledsoe against Phoenix. Oh my God. Come on. Like already we're getting this already.
If you don't want to put Eric Bledsoe in your lineup, you're doing it wrong. You got to want this one, for Eric Bledsoe here to just destroy this team.
Oh my God. Like this is so funny. Like, okay. First of all, he's 6,400, which is like nothing.
Yeah.
And second of all, like, yes, he's going against, not only is he going against his old team where they had a legit falling out, like this wasn't like let's let bygones be bygones and sent you off, you know, like they had a legit falling out, like he was like fuck you and they were like, well, fuck you, you know, it was that kind of thing,
big time,
you know, I'm paraphrasing there,
but that was pretty close, I think, actually.
Yeah,
there probably wasn't. He, you know, there was a hair salon involved, all that kind of thing. So,
yeah. But yeah, so look, Phoenix is so bad against point guards. Not only do they give up one of the highest paces in the game to point guards, 24.7 possessions per game, which is up there with, you know, like the Lakers and Brooklyn and Orlando, Memphis. You know, they give up a ton of possessions per game to point guards. But the difference is that those teams are a little more efficient against point guards. They give up a lot of possessions, but they're a little more efficient.
Right.
Phoenix is not efficient against them. They give up 1.05 fantasy points per minute, which is second worst in the league to Denver. And they give up 2.04 fantasy points per possession, which is right up there with Cleveland, you know, not definitely not in Denver territory or in Chicago territory, but they're just really, really bad against point guards. So you've got a team that is horrific against point guards, plays at a massive pace.
Yeah.
And then there's this mega, ultra amazing, whatever other adjectives I can think of, revenge game, the bad blood, the horrible defense, the $6,400 salary. Sean, this is like a dream matchup.
Yeah, I mean, just to be clear, because we love it so much, it's all going to go wrong. But Eric Bledsoe, right, exactly. Eric Bledsoe is a 40-point guy. Like, that is a thing. It is a very, very, very real thing for him to possibly put up 40 points. We've seen over 50 for him. He has a takeover mode. He has a crazy Eric Bledsoe. I remember last year in Denver when he put up over 50 and his salary started to get up into the 8Ks because he was just scoring so much. He was so aggressive with the ball. I have zero reason to believe that they will be able to sacrifice any high quality defender against him. No doubt about it. And it's not like the players have any bad blood here. Like, he hates the management. So he just wants to go out there, drop 30 on them, and throw alley-oops to Giannis in the open court. So there is definitely a Milwaukee onslaught lineup that you could design here, that's just fueled by all the hate and anger of Eric Bledsoe. So I think that that's definitely a possibility for your Friday night.
Yeah. And I mean, they're going to put TJ Warren on Giannis. Like, so
right. Which,
what is
like,
Tyler Ulis going
to, is luck.
Yeah. Like, is Tyler Ulis going to, Tyler Ulis is literally a toddler.
I don't know what's like, what do you do with Tyler Ulis on Giannis? Like, that's not going to happen, guys. Come on. Let's be clear about this. It's a terrible situation for them. So that said, let's talk about shooting guard, because there's a lot of depth here, and I actually think that there's a lot of merit to paying anywhere above 5.5K because you have opportunity cost, I think, that you're missing at shooting guard if you're not paying at a decent rate. I mean, first of all, you have Bradley Beal against Charlotte. This is one of the best shooting guard matchups on the board. Beal actually has the highest usage on the Wizards that are in more minutes than Wall right now. He accounts for more points scored as well. He doesn't account for many fantasy points because he doesn't have the assist upside. But he basically has a 30-point floor. He has only dipped below 30-point fantasy points three times this year. In 20 games. So you're talking about a very, very, in one of those games in Golden State, he left early, remember, because he got in a fight. So two times this year in a full allotment of minutes, he has dipped below 30 points. He has one of the clearest floors and some of the most upside. You know that you're going to get 30 points. The question is how easily can he get to 40? Now, he hasn't really popped for 40 in a couple games. You know, Cleveland and Phoenix allowed him to get there. And the problem with Beal is that if you don't get peripherals, all you get is the scoring. And you get a very, very nice floor for scoring, especially against Charlotte, who allows a lot of scoring to the shooting guard. We've seen them allow the three. We know that this is a positive matchup for shooting guards. The problem is how many extra possessions are you going to get against a relatively slow team? How many peripherals are you going to get from a guy who pretty much just scores? But I like the price. I don't mind the price, and I know that there's upside there. The question is there are guys on this slate that you can get over 33 points from, and you don't have to pay the same price. And one of those guys for me is CJ McCollum, 7K. Going to Philadelphia. Damian Lillard, a little bit banged up. He had an ankle in that Memphis game. But CJ McCollum projects in a very, very similar way. I mean, he has been over 30 fantasy points in his last couple games, scoring about 20 points. He adds a few more peripherals, which is nice. He'll add 2-3 steals, which is really when you see his ceiling pop. Philadelphia, you know, not exactly turning the ball over. Not exactly the most disciplined team, like turning the ball over the fourth most in the league right now, behind the Lakers and the mighty, mighty duo of Emmanuel Mudiay and Jamal Murray, in Denver, which is part of the reason why point guard scoring is so wonderful against Denver, by the way, because they turn the ball over constantly. But I think that you got to really like McCollum here. They're going to need to keep up with the scoring. And I think I was looking at the matchup here. From a size perspective, you have to make sure that the Blazers are big. You have to make sure that Robert Covington is guarded by either – or excuse me, Robert Covington or Ben Simmons is guarding Evan Turner. He's just too big for J.J. Redick. As much as you would like to hide Redick on him, you can't do it. So I think you're likely going to see McCollum get Redick, which is exactly where you want to be. And Lillard will probably get Simmons. I don't know. Fern, do you have a better sense of what that might look like from a matchup perspective? Any thoughts about that?
Oh, man. It's tough. It's tough to call. I would figure that, you know, you would have McCollum on. Well, I guess it's tough to call because, like, both McCollum and Dame can take the ball, you know, to right. the basket. You know, neither relies just on shooting. And so, I mean, you might have some switch off situations. Like, I don't think that you're going to primarily have either guy fixated on them. So,
no. Well, the nice thing is though, too, you're going to get the pick and roll, right? You're going to get the pick and roll action, which Nurk comes up, he sets the screen, and Embiid has to sink, which is what he's been doing. I heard somebody talking about this, like, you know, that Philadelphia was allowing a lot of just spot up threes because Embiid sinks. He's not used to the pick and roll action and people trying to pick on him and draw him out of the paint. But I think this is an interesting, CJ, the thing about CJ is he has the same range, a very similar range of outcomes as Beal. And he has even a ceiling that can at times rival Damian Lillard at times if he gets heated up. Right. In this offense. So I think he's cheaper. I think he's a great investment at 7K. He's not the only one. So what do you think about it? I don't mind this call. Andrew Wiggins is interesting.
Yeah, I just – this whole, like, range – like, shooting guard is just – it's always, like, just a big clusterfuck. Like,
I know. You can win and lose the slate right there.
Exactly. Like, there's just always going to be – these obvious, you know, I'm doing air quotes, obvious plays. And then there's always going to be these somewhat obvious plays. And I think that Wiggins is a somewhat obvious play because he's a little different than Beal and McCollum. Beal and McCollum can fill up the stat sheet more in a variety of areas. Wiggins is way more scoring dependent. One of the most scoring dependent players in the league.
Right.
He faced Orlando. By the way, he's facing the Magic. Faced them 10 months ago, and he put up 44 FanDuel points, 27 real points. So, yeah, the 27 real points comprises a pretty significant portion of those 42 or 44 FanDuel points. But the fact of the matter is he put up 44 FanDuel points against Orlando.
Yeah.
And Orlando's given up 0.88 fantasy points per minute, 1.84 fantasy points per possession to the shooting guard position, and both are above average, just for context. Minnesota's implied for 111 points, and they're a 7-point favorite. So I think that given the fact that Orlando is susceptible to getting beat by shooting guards, he's had success against them in the past, and his team is implied for a healthy total, and they're a favorite. Those are all in his favor. Don't worry about Wiggins if the Timberwolves somehow blow out Orlando. He always plays well into the 30 minutes, sometimes 40 minutes. Like, on a regular basis, you see Andrew Wiggins getting healthy minutes. You never really have to worry about his minutes. You just have to worry about, is he going to score points? And is he going to accidentally get you a couple rebounds and assists? That's right. The concern. And I think that this is just a game where he's going to be looked upon, given the fact that Orlando really struggles against shooting guards, or I guess against wings in general, that he's going to be looked upon to score points for them. He's so volatile, and it's just such a concern every time we roster him. You know,
yeah, and actually,
it could easily be a Jimmy game.
That's what I was going to say. Jimmy is really interesting.
Yes,
in this. So let's go ahead and look at small forward, and I'll talk about Jimmy here.
Good segue.
Yeah, you're going to attack this team on the wing because it's Terrence Ross and Evan Fournier. I mean, in a one-on-one with fucking Jimmy Butler versus Terrence Ross, I'll take Jimmy Butler every single time, even with one hand behind his back. You know, they've allowed 20 points to the small forward per game. They've allowed some of the most scoring to the shooting guard per game. And I think that people get hung up on the positional stuff here between these two. But let's be very clear. Like, they're the two and the three. Like, they're on the wing. Like,
they're the
wing. It doesn't matter. It's very, very flexible there in how Jimmy and Wiggins attack. They're 16th in overall defensive efficiency, which is just dropping precipitously. They're dropping 2 to 3 spots every single game because that early season defense was not real. They're a terrible rebounding team, one of the worst in overall rebound rate. There's just a lot to like here. We saw Victor Oladipo with 7 steals against this team, which is just unbelievable. They're 21st in, ninth in most steals allowed, over 8 steals per game. So you could see Jimmy rack up a couple extra turnovers here in this situation against a team that's not very disciplined. And God forbid Jimmy runs the point in this situation. If he does, then you're going to be able to just destroy Elfrid Payton, which has been what everybody's doing, which, by the way, puts Jeff Teague very, very firmly in play. I didn't talk about him, but Jeff Teague very firmly in play at 6,500. That's the other side of this, right? Wiggins is scoring dependent. Jimmy is not, and Jimmy can score just as much as him, but he's $2,000 more expensive, which is the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the end of the day, I prefer Jimmy. I just think that Wiggins, you're going to look at him and see your 4, 5, 6% ownership and just cross your fingers and hope he doesn't kill you.
Definitely.
One guy that's really similar to Jimmy is, in the sense that he can fill up the stat sheet in a whole bunch of areas, is Robert Covington. And when you're going against Portland, you want to use wings. Wings do well against the Trailblazers. On a per possession basis, that's where they struggle most of all the positions. Covington himself has had success against Portland, 49 and 33 FanDuel points against them in his last two outings. He scored 20 plus real points in both. 19 rebounds, 3 steals, 2 blocks in those outings. So he definitely is, at least recently, comfortable against this Portland team. And not much has changed on their – actually, nothing has changed on their wing defense. So he's going against the same guys, you know, in Harkless and Turner and, you know, McCollum. So there's nothing changing against the guys he's going to face off with. So those factors really give you, comfort knowing that the variables that we're looking at are pretty much the same. He scored over 30 FanDuel points in his last two games. He had a 50-point outing on the 13th against the Clippers. The Clippers are horrific against small forwards. And I like to think that Philly – you got to trust the process with Philly, right, Sean? Like, they're smart. They're a smart team.
Right.
And they know where teams are susceptible to getting beaten by. So if they're going to trust the process in this game and they go against Portland's weak point, they're going to lean on Covington and, you know, hopefully lean on a little Dario Saric, because that's my boy. I love Dario in my lineup in the, lower price tier. I love the guy, but I think that Covington is going to be able to exploit this Portland defense and have a really nice outing at a really, really tasty price.
The thing that I struggle with is the rebounding upside. There's not a lot of rebounding upside in matchups against Portland, and that does worry me, but I do like his ability to, you know, get some mismatches in this situation against some of those, you know, some of those fours, some of those guys like an Ed Davis or Novonley and stuff like that. I think that's a good good spot for him. Guys, you know, especially with, you know, Embiid and Simmons attracting so much attention.
And just to be clear before we move to power forward, like, you know, there's obviously, like, I mean, you got, just to rattle them off real quick, I mean, TJ Warren, Harrison Barnes, Jaylen Brown, Evan Fournier, Brandon Ingram, Damari Carroll, Taurean Prince, et cetera. Like, you have so many guys blending in this price tier.
Right.
And you got to look for your angles. And I think that he's a nice angle to take. You know, obviously, you can feel good about playing a lot of those other guys. But, you know, that's kind of my mentality here.
I really am interested in Damari Carroll. I love this pace up situation for him, coming off a rest, increased usage. You want exposure to teams facing him. He has rebounding upside. He has peripheral upside. You know, he
can score too. He's scoring at, I think I read, someone tweeted that he's scoring at his highest point per game total of his career.
Yeah, it's really, really impressive stuff. So I'm very, very into trying to figure out how to get Damari Carroll into my lineups. We'll see how that works.
Sean, DFD, don't forget Damari.
Don't forget Damari. All right, power forward though, same game, RHJ, same team. You know, not quite the same floor and more expensive. A little bit more variance, but a little bit more upside as well. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at 7,200. He's getting the Cavs. They have been very susceptible to the power forward. And this guy, you know, I mean, in matchups like this, he's been really good at, you know, racking up just kind of the little type of paint numbers, the rebounds, the blocks, maybe a steal here and there, you know, and upwards of capable of scoring upwards of 20 points. In the last three games D'Angelo in the lineup. Yeah, without D'Angelo in the lineup, he's actually lost some minutes to Trevor Booker. You're right. But Trevor Booker right now nursing an ankle, I believe it is.
Yes.
If he does not play, you really, really, really have to look at Rondae Hollis-Jefferson because it's going to push his minutes above that 27 mark. And when you have – the thing about Brooklyn is they try to run a pretty easy rotation on their guys. They try to let them run 27, 28, 29 minutes. And when they push above 32 minutes, that's when you really got to start to pay attention. In that Golden State game, he got 31 minutes. He put up 16 points and 12 rebounds. He is their small ball five. So in a situation where Kevin Love is running the five here, Hollis-Jefferson is going to be the guy that they put out there to guard Kevin Love, which is not a phenomenal matchup just from a size perspective, but it is from, you know, a rebounding and pace perspective. Hollis-Jefferson should have the ability to, you know, do some work in this situation. On the glass against a Cleveland team that, you know, just gets up a lot of shots and doesn't necessarily contest rebounds that well. The other guy, though, I mean, it's really hard not to see that you want to get exposure to this Golden State-Oklahoma game. And we don't normally think of Draymond Green as a cash play, but the man has not scored below, 35 points basically since that Philadelphia game. He has gotten over 30 minutes in five straight games. He's gotten over 35 in his last three. He is obviously, we know, stuffing the stat sheet, doing stuff like 8, 7, and 8 with two blocks. You know, that was his line in that Philadelphia game. You have to assume that this game is going to be competitive with Oklahoma City, in which case he's going to get 30 minutes. You want him in competitive games. They use him to defend anyone and everyone when they need defense. He's the anchor of the defense. It's too cheap for a guy who, when he gets the minutes, you know, we know he doesn't have to score, but we know he's going to participate. You know, he's got the most peripheral upside that there is in a game at 7,500. I mean, I feel like that's a really good price for Draymond in a really, really competitive game. So that's when you want him. But I like this call a lot too. I think this is kind of a sleepy one. Everybody was so hot on the coups, and now, you know, things have kind of slowed down for him, but this is a pretty good spot.
Yeah, Kyle Kuzma's stock rose very quickly.
Precipitously.
It rose precipitously, and then it had a little correction and came down to a level at which I am very much interested in buying some shares. There's all my stock trading speak. Yeah. But against Sacramento, like, my God, like, you got to love his upside in this matchup. Clearly a high usage player on this LA team. He's getting 20% usage or more pretty much every night, getting into the 30s sometimes. With that kind of usage against a team like Sacramento, they're really bad against bigs, just about average against forwards. He's kind of like, you know, in the middle there, like, you know, obviously a power forward, you know, sometimes he's used, you know, in a forward type of role, you know, kind of on the wing. And sometimes he's, you know, looked upon to get rebounds and whatnot when they get Brook Lopez off the floor and they get Randall in there and they run their smaller unit. But you just got to like his chances in this one. I mean, there's a few guys in this range that catch my eye, just like the small forward position. And I mean, there's just so many guys. This slate, my God, like, it's just so big. You know, I'm just looking there and, you know, we talked about Carmelo briefly earlier. Obviously, Derek Favors is the flavor of the week. Your boy RHJ, you know, great pick. Otto Porter right below, you know, always has a chance to be the top scorer on that Wizards team. And then a few more just down below. I mean, we could talk all day about these guys, but Kuzma, just that matchup with Sacramento. Yeah. I think a lot of attention will be drawn to that LA backcourt, and he'll have some nice open, you know, situations to produce. So I'm interested in him at 35, 40 points.
Yeah, I think it's a good spot. I mean, it's been hard to figure out what Sacramento's real flaws are. We've been trying to attack them. The thing that you just know is they're just a bad defense. They're going to allow a lot of scoring to the opposite team. They're going to slow the pace, and they're not going to pop in DVP or anything like that because they just don't allow that many possessions. But they're a bad defense. And so I think you have to consider that, no doubt about it. At center, I'm interested in Clint Capella. We just saw this Nuggets team, sans Paul Millsap, start to give it up to the center. Kosta Kufos goes for 37 fantasy points because Nikola Jokic doesn't play good defense. You get an athletic center like him in this situation, fast-paced game. The usage is going down, obviously. You're not going to have as much usage, but you don't really – the nice thing is you don't rely on Clint Capella for a lot of shot attempts necessarily. You know that he has the peripheral upside, the blocks, the rebounds, that kind of thing. It showed a 30-point floor, more or less, depending on how many minutes he gets. I think in this situation, when you have a solid rotation of bigs, you could project him for some more minutes, especially coming off of a nice, you know, 2 days of rest. The difficult thing is his minutes can vary anywhere from 21 minutes to 34 minutes. If he gets 30-plus minutes, he's going to score 40 fantasy points. That's a pretty consistent trend. If he goes over 30 minutes, he's going to get 40 fantasy points. Now, the difficult thing is that with the return of Chris Paul, and I don't know if how much this affects the rotations, but I have to think it allows them to play a little bit more small ball with Ryan Anderson at the four or Ryan Anderson at the five. By pushing Eric Gordon back to the second unit. You push Eric Gordon back to the second unit, therefore you don't have to have a center out there as much. It's very possible that they want to keep him at 28 minutes, and they're not going to push him over 28 minutes. But even in 28 minutes, he's capable of getting you 30-plus fantasy points, and at 7,500, you're asking for just over 35, which I think is a very feasible number for him in this Denver matchup. I will say I think your guy is just that's just an unbelievable spot here for to get exposure. If you're not going to take exposure to LeBron, then I think you probably should try to take exposure to Kevin Love. Talk to me.
Yeah. I mean, in this game, like, you got to get a Cleveland chair. You have to. I mean, LeBron or Kevin Love. You know, or just some, you know, someone else on that team is going to do something as well. But, you know, it all starts with Love and it starts with LeBron. you know, and Love, I mean, he's been on a tear lately. He's pretty much in the 30s every single night. He pops from time to time. He had 53 against Dallas. No surprise there. 62 against Milwaukee. I mean, goddamn, 62 against Milwaukee. I mean, Milwaukee is definitely beatable from time to time. But, you know, that just shows you Kevin Love's upside this season. You know, other than a mini dud against Brooklyn at the onset of the season, he's just fared well against them. I mean, he's never scored under 30 FanDuel points. He's had a couple like nice 40 something point outings. Like, he's had success against Brooklyn. At the beginning of the season, like, I just write that off, that it was like one of the first few games of the season and, you know, whatever. I don't remember the context of the game, but, you know, I write that off as just an outlier. 1.26 fantasy points per minute, 21 possessions per game to the center position. Brooklyn is beatable by centers. And I just think about his usage lately. I mean, he has crazy usage, like well into the 20% every night, a couple 30%ers. He's got a shot at 50+, assuming the game stays close and he can get into the 30s in minutes again, which I don't see that not happening.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at these. I'm looking at the, you know, the rebound numbers, the minutes, the overall minutes numbers. He's just like, he's playing a, he's, you know, we know him as a stretch four, stretch five, but they're kind of saying like, you know, go for the more traditional center role. No team allowing more points to the center position, 24 points. I think the interesting thing is, you know, we know that if Kevin Love goes on a tear, like, he's capable of being one of the slate's top scorers. He's capable of doing Anthony Davis type, you know, 24 and 15 type numbers. I think 8K is a phenomenal price to say you're pivoting off of LeBron, staying on Giannis, and going to that price point. Like, I have zero issue with that. And he actually fits lineups with studs pretty well. So I think it's a pretty solid investment, no doubt about it, to go to Kevin Love, even maybe more than Capella, because, you know, as long as that game stays close, he's going to get the minutes. But there's a lot of bargain guys out here tonight, Josh, and on a big slate, these are the kinds of people that you're going to want to try to fit into your lineups, you know, to try to get a little bit. But, you know, I think it's definitely contrarian on a large slate. It's always contrarian to try and be focus less on the value guys and focus more on the knowing the mid-range guys, because everybody knows the studs. Everybody knows the injured and active guys who are supposed to go for 6X. You know, that the question is in the mid-range, where do you know the edges that other guys aren't paying attention, other players aren't paying attention to? So at point guard, this is a really interesting one, and I love that you brought this up. George Hill has been crushing at point guard recently. 5'3". We kind of knew that eventually once he got healthy, he would start to get these minutes back. He's got 30 minutes in his last game against Denver. A phenomenal matchup there. 30, 32. They've been slowly creeping him up since that Atlanta game. He had 24, he had 27, he had 30, he had 32. And each day his fantasy scoring has gone up. He is in a solid spot here against the Lakers. I think that, you know, we have seen a lot of big scoring from the point guard position against the Lakers, 26 in DVP to the position. So I think George Hill is one of the better safe upside value point guards in this situation. And I think Jose Calderon, I think that you're going to see that name a lot. I think people are going to be really comfortable going to him. But, you know, you're talking about a guy who is 3K, who in his first game that he started against without Iman Shumpert out, in just 28 minutes, had 23 fantasy points against Detroit. You have to think he's going to get at least 28 minutes in this situation again. He's min price. Do we think he's going to go score 14 points against Detroit? No. I mean, how much of that was garbage time? It's still Jose Calderon, but do I think he could get you 15 fantasy points against Brooklyn? Yeah, probably. Moving on, I'm going to let you handle shooting guard, Josh. Talk to us about these options.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Snell is always getting crazy minutes. I mean, he's just well into the 30s every single game out. His usage is just piss poor, you know, often in the single digits in usage percentage. So that's always concerning. But against Phoenix, he's going to run into some situations in this game where he's going to get you some rebounds, some steals, you know, maybe a block, some assists. One thing worth noting about Tony Snell is he lately is putting up some decent points, 17, 13, 25, 18. You know, he had a dud against the Lakers, but 19. And then he had a stretch in early November where he went 25, 20, 22, 20. That was, I think, without Chris Middleton at full strength. But the point is like Tony Snell is out on the court. He's going to play. And against Phoenix, you got to feel good about him. J.R. Smith, you got to feel good about J.R. Smith against Brooklyn. You know, I said before that there's going to be a guy who also produces outside of Love and LeBron. And I think the first guy that comes to mind is J.R. Smith. Obviously, Calderon is interesting with his new role, but J.R. Smith is very interesting as well. And then Lou Williams versus Atlanta. You made the note about his homecoming game. He's a Georgia boy. Played high school ball in Georgia, grew up in Georgia. And, you know, I don't know what his career game logs are against Atlanta, but you got to think that he's going to get up for a game, you know, playing in front of all his high school and childhood friends. You know, I mean, why not, you know, play the narrative in NBA DFS.
Play the narrative and play a guy whose price is dropping. I mean, the problem that you have the problem that you have here with Lou, and I think this is a real issue, is we saw Pat Bev come back, take 27 minutes out of this backcourt. He only had 26 minutes in that New York game. If he is not like the guy being asked to do all of the scoring, I think you're probably going to see him struggle, and you want to see the price maybe even come back down a little bit more. But matching up with the Atlanta Wings is a really, really good matchup, which is why I think you could look at Wesley Johnson here in this situation at 4,600. He's still filling in for Gallinari. He's the cheapest of all of these guys. I think that's a good spot for him, although Austin Rivers on the second unit point guard is interesting as well. His price is dropping. He's just been playing really, really badly. Allen Crabbe, we know he's a great three-point shooter. We know he can get hot at any point, and he has been getting extra run in this Brooklyn offense. He's really, you know, reasonably priced, 5,600. He is a guy who could easily go for over 30 fantasy points, and they're asking him to score without D'Angelo in the lineup. He's playing the two alongside Dinwiddie. You know, Josh points that out here, that he is not actually playing the three. He's playing the two, which is kind of his natural position, and he's going to fire from three. So in a high-scoring affair, he could definitely be an interesting guy to go for over 30 points. Kyle Anderson, he has been getting 30 minutes from Popovich, and there is no better matchup on the board than being the three against the New Orleans Pelicans, as Paul George. You know, he did the same thing against Atlanta, which is why we like Wesley Johnson in this spot. You have a great matchup on the wing there in New Orleans. Kyle Anderson, just 5,200. Very, you know, very, very clear path to success coming off of rest. As long as you're coming off of rest in Popovich's offense, you're not at risk to get 24 minutes. Anderson, if you look here, the only time he's ever gotten 24 minutes, well, not the only time, but recently the only times he's ever gotten less than 30 minutes are when he is on a back-to-back. They have not been playing Rudy Gay as much because he's just not as solid defensively. But Rudy Gay, very interesting. Only if we knew he was going to get more run. He's just not getting enough run. There was a couple times where Rudy Gay – there's going to be some spots where Rudy Gay blows up. This is not going to be one of them just because of minutes perspective. So I think there's a ability to spend down in this range and try to target some guys who – you know, we know are capable of getting 30 fantasy points in the minutes that they are given. The other guy that I'm keeping a very close eye on is Thabo Sefolosha. Thabo's been good. I mean, he's still 4K. If we knew that he was going to get more run, if anybody's out, you have to always consider him because he has the steals upside against a Chicago team coming off a back-to-back. I think that's interesting. They're finally back at home. Talk to me about power forward because I'm definitely going to put one of these guys in my lineup. I just haven't decided which one it is.
Yeah, Taj Gibson has just been like I there's been several nights where like several nights, like three, four slates where I've gone Gibson and Dario at my power forward spots because their price is just moving so slowly upward. And it's beautiful because it seems like both of those guys are like just locks for 30 points a night. And that's just so comforting knowing that you're going to get 25 to 35 points from your power forward. You know, you just don't really have to worry about it. And so I really like Taj Gibson against Orlando. Orlando's just like you mentioned, like 15, 20 minutes ago, Sean, like they're not a good rebounding team. They are just so beatable on the glass. And Minnesota is in such a nice spot on a fantasy points per minute situation. One of the worst teams against the power forward position Orlando is. So I really like Taj getting a ton of minutes, still a very palatable price. And then Jay Crowder against Brooklyn. Jay Crowder is starting to get some run lately. Obviously, Brooklyn is one of the worst teams against the power forward position. And Jay Crowder's 4,300. And he's gotten 25, 27, 26, 22, 34, so on and so forth. He's really carving out a niche on this team. And he scored over double digits in three of his last five games. So I mean, if there's a spot for him to, you know, finally break the 30 point mark again, since he did it against the Wizards back on November 3rd, I think this is it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's definitely, a good call. We also have a reverse revenge game on the opposite side of the Eric Bledsoe game here, Josh. Greg Monroe versus Milwaukee, reverse revenge game. Milwaukee has struggled to the center at times this season. Now they've kind of corrected it recently, but still allowing 22 points, 17 rebounds to the position. The hard part with Triano's front court is you really don't know who's going to get the minutes. Like I would love to say that we know that he's going to get run, but he has been, if anything, very, very inconsistent. You know, definitely struggling to get consistent run in this situation. The other guy, you know, behind Alex Len, the other guy, by the way, that you're going to have to keep your eye on in this situation is Thon Maker. And the reason I say that is that John Henson is out. He has an eye thing going on. I'm not really sure. But that's a big deal. Thon Maker is going to probably have to pick up a lot of those minutes. And, you know, you don't necessarily want him matching up against Greg Monroe. But that's when Greg Monroe is going to crush. Because Thon Maker, as good as this kid could be as a stretch five, there's nobody that can guard Greg Monroe in the paint if Thon Maker is the guy who's being tasked with guarding Greg Monroe, who is, you know, 250 pounds, and you know, bruising through the middle there. So this is a great spot for Greg Monroe to mash against Thon Maker. And Kosta Koufos against the Lakers. They, you know, once the Kings got destroyed by Dwayne Dedmon, they said enough is enough. Koufos is our guy. We're not playing Scala BCA anymore. He's just too soft. They put Koufos in. They instantly give Nurkic fits. He's been playing nearly 30 minutes per game. He's been really, really productive. The guys, you know, he's a veteran. There's not going to be that much longer that he can play this many minutes, but he is taking over. And they're running a much bigger lineup, I think, in order to protect the rim and try to get more rebounds. And he has done exactly that. Over 30 fantasy points in two of his last three when he gets 30 minutes. So he is almost a fantasy point per minute type guy. So against the Lakers in a high-paced game, you have to think that maybe he gets an opportunity to soak up some extra rebounds, stuff like that. Possibly get a couple free buckets. But we know that they also against the Lakers, they might run a little bit of a smaller lineup. So you could definitely see some Willie Cauley-Stein, who, you know, attracts a lot more attention, but is $2,000 more expensive and way more inconsistent. Way more inconsistent, but he should certainly get some run against the Lakers in this situation. That's really all you can do at center. The more and more I think about Greg Monroe, the more and more I'm just gonna, so tempting against Thonmaker. Like that's a problem, guys.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Josh, let's slide it over to FD. Let's see if we can throw together a lineup. We got a lot of takes, a lot of hot takes, a lot of super hot takes. I have a lineup where I've got Giannis and LeBron. Now, do I like it? Not particularly, but I don't hate it. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Jeff Teague, Eric Bledsoe, spent up at shooting guard. I spent up there. Gary Harris, because we didn't talk about Gary Harris, but one of the usage gaps for the first unit of this team, Gary Harris and Will Barton. I don't like Will Barton against Trevor Ariza, but I don't mind Gary Harris against James Harden in this situation. Bogdan Bogdanovich, the Sacramento Bogdan, 3,700, getting at least 20 minutes plus per night. Giannis and LeBron. Kenneth Faried, by the way, value power forward that we forgot about. He's filling in for Millsap. Taj and Greg Monroe.
I like that. I got one for you.
All right, hit me. I'm gonna clear my lineup. Go.
All right. Eric Bledsoe and Spencer Dinwiddie.
Ooh.
James Harden and Sweet Lou. Jimmy and Kyle Anderson. Taj is locked in for me. Greg Monroe at center. And then I have 50. I have 5,500 left over. And I'm up in the air here. Like I'm all into Dario. You know, I'm always into Dario, but I worry about that Portland defense and that pace. My eye is drawn to Julius Randle against Sacramento. Yeah,
I like that call. I like that call. I definitely think that that's an interesting spot to attack. You could also go, I'm trying to see if you could go down here to anybody. You know, you could go down. Could you go down to a Jay Crowder and then
get yourself? Say, a little J, and then we got 1,200 left over to upgrade, you know, from like Lou Williams, for example, to a 6,600 to Andrew Wiggins, but I don't want to run Wiggins and Jimmy.
Yeah, I don't think you want to do that.
So, you know, I think the bottom line is like, I think what you got to do is you really got to hang your hat on one stud.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right.
Like, because there are just so many mid-range guys that are in nice spots.
Right.
Obviously, to each their own, but that's kind of my mindset.
I would agree with that. I think that I always love a good mid-range point guard, a George Hill. In this situation, a fine George Hill or an Eric Bledsoe,
a fine 1985 George Hill.
I think a real nice. I'm so in love with you. Talked about Kevin Love. I'm so in love with Kevin Love right now.
Oh, I forgot about Kevin Love. George Hill, 1986. Sorry, George.
A fine 1986 though. Mustachioed 1986. Here, I've got a little something working with Giannis and K-Love here. Let me see if I can get this going here. So George Hill, Eric Bledsoe, and then I don't have my shooting guards in yet, but I have 6,900 for both of them. So let's call that. The problem that I have here is we're fading this OKC game. You know, like as competitive as that game is going to, that game's going to be so back and forth. Starters going to get so many minutes, but is it worth fading it? Do you think?
I mean, I honestly, I'm not like crazy about it.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's going to be a really, I mean, I could see it being like a 95-90 game.
Yeah.
You know, and like somebody has a really nice outing, but I don't see it being super high scoring. Because Golden State's really hunkering down on defense. They're getting a lot better as the season is moving on, getting back to their normal, you know.
Well, if they want to play defense, they can play at the drop of a hat. I mean,
right.
It's not.
No, you're right. You're right. Exactly.
You know, that's not a thing. All right. So here, this is an interesting lineup though. And actually I really kind of like this. So George Hill, Eric Bledsoe, Gary Harris, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. You know, I'm a Gary Harris guy, Josh.
Oh no, I know you love Gary Bear.
I love a Gary Harris guy. It's just talk about a guy who's so consistent. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope too. Same. He's getting into the same role. Like he becomes that kind of shooting guard version of Bob Cuff. Like they do more than just score, but they're so good at defense that they're always out there for 30 minutes a night. Giannis, Damari Carroll, Kenneth Faried, Draymond, and Kevin Love. That is really interesting to me.
I really like that a lot.
I really like that a lot too. You get a nice spread out across the slate. Exposure to some of the best games, best totals on the slate. Yeah, I like that one. I'm going to save that one. All right. Hey, we got to get out of here. You got to get back to work in the morning. I'm getting on an airplane.
It's overrated.
Work is overrated. That's a good
point. It is. Let's move to Argentina where they don't look at work like we do.
Hey man, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't think you can play BFS in Argentina though.
I don't know if you can. You probably get the podcast though.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. All right, buddy. I will talk to you. All right.
Behave yourself. We'll keep in touch and good luck with Thanksgiving, man.
Yeah, all right, I'll talk to you then.
Safe travels.